It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I didn't realize that it was Memorial Day and we're gotcha. Partying and it's great.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here and checking out this series. Of course, you know what to do if you like what you see and what you hear. Hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFBK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Recent episodes have included, Les Claypool from Primus. I've had on Brendan Hunt. He plays Coach Beard on Ted Lasso. Ricky Lee Jones, the new pornographers, Belinda Carlisle of the Go-Go's. We had Phil Collin of Def Leppard on recently, as well as actors like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Wyatt Olive, Chase Sui Wonders, Travis Van Winkle, Jemima Kirk, and so much more. Just a few recent episodes that you can find at the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. Once again, having him back. This time, well, we've got a lot of ground to cover, like always, whenever Stone drops by the show. First off, we're going to be talking about the new album from his band, Brad. It's the final album after the passing of Sean Smith. It's called In the Moment That You're Born. And it arrives at the same time that they're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the very first Brad album called Shame. So Stone's going to reflect on the passing of lead singer Sean Smith, as well as how he drew inspiration back in the day from NWA and Ice Cube for his guitar work. What's really fun, we're also going to discuss the contrasting experiences of recording Shame in comparison to Pearl Jam's 10, Temple of the Dog's self-titled record, and Nirvana's Nevermind. In fact, we'll spend a bit of time in the early 90s in those recording sessions for those iconic records, also including Verses. We'll talk a little bit about how that all ramps up into Verses and how they connect to the new Brad album, which actually features a cover of Malfunction, which was Andrew Wood, his pre-Mother Love Bone band. Now, Stone's also going to share some insights on the 25th anniversary of Pearl Jam's Yield. I think that's my favorite Pearl Jam record. And I'll ask about the unreleased songs from that album and the possibility of that Lost Dogs Volume 2 that we talked about last time. Stone's also going to, of course, give us an update on the next Pearl Jam album. It's being produced by Andrew Watts. We knew that. Andrew's a big old fan of Pearl Jam and Soundgarden. Known also for his work, though, with Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez. And Stone says Andrew's pushed him a little bit more for more bit of a immediate sound. Maybe, possibly, a classic sound for this upcoming release. So let's get into it. We're going to be talking about In the Moment That You're Born. It's Kyle Meredith with Stone Gossard.
Are you you're not tired of me yet?
If you really want to make this an official annual thing, we just need to set it up in the calendar. I think I've okay. I've got plenty of questions every time. It's great to have you back. And with lots going on, I am of course going to hit on a little Pearl Jam later on, but more present, I guess, is Brad, which we got to talk about a little bit last time. But here you've got the final Brad album, In the Moment That You're Born, and the 30th anniversary reissue of Shame.
That's been a work in progress for about it's, you know, a couple of 3 years now. So a little slow on that journey, and for good reason, really. I think it was important for us just to take a breath, and then we sort of moved through, kind of going through sort of the last recordings that we had with Sean and the band, and which was a really good period of time for us. You know, it was a very optimistic period of time, and we had done some of that recording, and then I think put it on a shelf for a little while, and then we're even coming back to it, and it was really scheduled that Sean and the band were going to get back together and even add more to what we were working on, and that was the week that Sean passed. So it was a very difficult, just really sad, a really sad situation. But it was really nice to be able to go back and listen to these songs again, and spend time with Keith Lowe, who plays bass in the band, and Regan, and just spend some time together listening and sort of marveling at what Sean did so naturally, and then sort of putting the final touches on what will be our last record. So it was a labor of love for sure.
And I imagine that's, such a unique situation to deal with an album like this when you've had the passing of someone who's in those sessions, and especially when you're dealing with one of the greatest voices of, all time in rock music. Sean's voice has meant a lot to me out there, but what does that mean at that point? I mean, understandably, you have to put some time and space in the sessions, between recording them and finishing it. But what did it take to pull it across the finish line?
We put on our hats of, we tried to put on our hats of what we were thinking when we made the first record. I think that's always been the sort of the place where we had the most success and the most freedom and the sort of the most enjoyment was sort of when we had nothing to lose and we were making the very first record. We made it in, it's an old story, but a friend of mine suggested we wanted to make a record. Regan and Sean and I and my friend Alex Rose and I suggested a bass player that he knew. We'd never heard him play before. And I was just feeling, my oats at that time, coming off, 10 and the tour, and thinking, well, if I can do it in this band, these guys are amazing, and this is so different, and you guys can do the same thing. And we just decided that we were going to write a record and record it in a week, or maybe 10 days, and that's what we set out to do, and that's what we did. We just, we'd go into a practice studio, we'd smoke pot, and we'd kind of play around a little bit, and we'd find something, and we'd get it on tape, and then that was a song. And then we would try to play everything, once a day going into the recording. And then as we did that, things developed a little bit more and sort of, but we were able to remember kind of basic arrangements. We all played really simply, and it was a very simple setup. Jeremy Toback, the bass player, is an incredible bass player. So we were totally blessed by his playing. He totally transformed the band. And it was, everything was made up on the spot. Lyrics would be written, as it was going down. A lot of them were just improvised. and it was by the seat of our pants, and it had some magic. You know, there was something there that was really special. And I think we still made good music after that, but I think that we were always chasing that innocence, that, you know, that first moment, because we didn't have any expectations, and everybody was just in a very, we were sharing, you know, as much as you can share. And I think that that's the most underrated element of any artistic project. I mean, music for sure, but others, I'm imagining, is that's the spirit of sort of opening yourself up to, one, putting, thinking that you have something to bring to the party, and also being open to the idea that you might not, but somebody else might have something that's is equally cool or different, and navigating every, you have to navigate a thousand sort of you have to navigate a thousand decisions together as a group, and it's, you get, you know, you get fatigued by it at some point, and you can kind of lock into certain things and certain ways of seeing things, or even mindsets that that make you feel like, well, I kind of know what I need to do here, and, you know, let me just handle this, or, you know, I got this and you got that, and it fragments like that really, really easily. So it's a, again, I'm probably veering off your question, but it's just thinking about it reminds me of all that stuff about the magic of just sharing with each other and holding hands and jumping off a cliff and going, okay, let's see if we can do something.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Stone Gossard.
What a spoiling situation, though. I mean, considering how quick the Brad record came together, how quick the Pearl Jam record sort of came together, the Temple record came together. When you finally had to do a record that took a while, that must have been quite the different beast.
You know, we were lucky enough after, you know, 10 wasn't a record that came together easily. Temple was. Temple was like Chris Cornell at his, you know, the height of his powers, or, you know, as strong of an artistic and musical, and I mean, his engineering, his, you know, his lyrics, the diversity of his influences between him and Matt Cameron, they were so pro that we went in that just being carried by that. You know what I mean? Like, they were like, yeah, well, you guys can bring in some stuff too, and a couple riffs, and fine, we'll make them amazing. But that was, you know, the easiest record we've ever made, because, you know, because of the incredible professionality of Chris and Matt. And we did our element that we added to it. You know, they make Soundgarden records. You can hear what a Soundgarden record sounds like, and then you hear that record. You know, what we brought to that record was just this sort of, you know, maybe our feel, maybe our, you know, just a little bit more of the blues, a little bit more soulful in terms of kind of where it was coming from. And which suited Chris's voice like amazingly. It's like, oh my God, it also, you know, not only is he like this, you know, golden God singing from a mountaintop, you know, but he also has this element of like a true freaking, you know, soul singer, you know, and it only got more, you know, here's solo stuff and even other, you know, it's like Burden in My Hand or Soundgarden songs where it's just like transcendent, you know, in terms of a lyric and a voice at the same time. It's amazing. So we worked, but when we went in to make 10, we were kind of spoiled with that, and then thinking, oh, we'll just go in and do that same thing again. And then it wasn't that. We had a new singer, and we didn't have the leadership of Chris and Matt at that point. We had to kind of work it out amongst ourselves, and we labored that one more than we should have. But the good thing was that after that, we started working with Brendan O'Brien, and Brendan O'Brien was fast as well. Brendan O'Brien didn't want to mess around. If something wasn't fun or like happening soon, let's move on to something else. And that was good enough, and I'll fix it, you know, later. And, you know, all, you know, so he was, and so we did keep moving quickly, and that we were able to do that with Pearl Jam. And the first five records are pretty much kind of just us learning a song, replaying it once or four times, and then that's kind of it. And it shows, because some of them are great and some of them are kind of half-baked a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, and that's part of what people love about them now is like, isn't it great that those guys were so kind of lazy and sloppy that they just left that, you know, part the way it was? Or, you know, if Gossard could hear what was going on, he'd know that's actually a minor part, not major, but he's refusing to listen to it. So he's just continuing to play his, you know what I mean? All that stuff. So, you know, whether you like it or not, that's, we did work fast, but as far as the writing side of it, you know, that Brad record, that was really group writing. We've done some of that in Pearl Jam too, but mostly Pearl Jam was like, bring your riff in and kind of we'll build it up. And that's still not quite the same as like that sort of like just start something, but don't dominate it. Like start it and see where it goes and actually be able to kind of stay with each other. That's very sort of, that's a trust exercise for sure.
And it's reminding me of when Sean, when 20th Century starts on the Shame record, and I think it's Sean or somebody saying, we found the groove.
Yeah, yeah.
And like everything, you found the groove. You found the groove so seemingly easy with that band, with Brad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's an incredible record, the Shame.
And that's, you know, it's Regan Hagar always had that sort of, his backbeat was always just really, really had a lot of feeling to it. And Malfunction was so important in Seattle and his spirit in that band. And then that, you know, the guitar lick, it's very, you know, Paul Soldier. It's me listening to a lot of NW and Ice Cube, and just really just all thinking about was just like the pulse and like repetitive patterns that just get you mesmerized. And it doesn't sound like any of those things, but it's, when you put them all together, then it's, you know, and then Sean playing, you know, not being a strong keyboard player, being a tasty one, knew what he wanted it, but like very much an amateur like everybody else, with just 2 and 3 note little runs that were just kept it really simple, and then just courageously let his voice just say anything or be anywhere. And you can hear that honesty in his voice. It's like, that's when it gets good, you know, is like he'll get onto something where he's feeling it in a particular way, and it translates into voice. It translates into, you know, that spine tingling aspect of his performance.
And on throughout that record. And it was almost surprising, I know at the time, even how different your playing was. And again, we're talking about things happening very naturally, and here you are in this group setting. So of course it's going to, and the only time I feel like the DNA is there, shared DNA with maybe, you know, what you were doing at Pearl Jam, is the song My Fingers. Like, it's right. Do you feel like it was important for you to kind of have that distinction at the time?
I wanted to do the opposite. You know, I'd been doing, you know, I wanted to be a minimalist in Brad, and that's what was exciting to me. And I just, at the time, like I said, I was feeling my oats. I was like, anything can happen. Like, the world is, if 10 can become this popular record, which to me, it's like 10 is, it's a cool record, but it's Nirvana has this fully like pop element of how the songs are constructed, and the way the vocal lays across the beat, and this, you know, very strong sort of sensibility in terms of melody and pop that is, and it's heavy and it's lyrically amazing and it's like beautiful, but the Pearl Jam record wasn't really, it didn't have like pop elements. It was more like we were trying to be kind of arty and punk at the same time, but also we were listening to heavy metal and, like, you know, and the 70s. And so it's still a record that surprises me how much people think it's a great record, because I do think it's a great record, but I think it's stuff that I can't see about it. You know, it's the, again, it's the mixing of the alchemy of that combination of things just says one thing to some people. And to me, I'm looking at it kind of like, it's a lot of parts, and it's kind of, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but that's my analytical sort of perspective. So it's fun. I'm glad it all worked out.
Glad it all worked out. It might be a bit of an understatement. That was, you know, and I've talked about this before, so it's no real news. It's a bit of blasphemous, you know, to other Pearl Jam fans. Tin was my entry point along with everybody else's at the time, but it wasn't my favorite. I mean, that would come later on in the catalog. I've appreciated Tin. I like Tin. For the first year, I think I put it on to put me to sleep sometimes, but it was Verses that I picked up and I became a huge fan.
Yeah, that's what my instinct would be too. That's where I feel like we sort of like, we showed the kind of, you know, we took the elements of Tin that were like working and some of the, and didn't have so much of the kind of confusing sort of, you know, overly arranged or overly played. I mean, it was just, it was more visceral, more, and Ed was just, you know, Ed was more involved in the writing of it. It wasn't him just kind of laying over an arrangement that was sort of already built and he had to figure it out. It was more straightforward. So I'm with you.
Sort of bridging that, you know, as we're already doing this, you know, present in the past on this new Brad record, In the Moment That You're Born, you all cover Malfunction with Stars and You. How did that one happen?
I think me and Regan were just talking about redoing that song, and we just thought it'd be fun if we did a cover of it, you know. And this was this was probably 10 years ago that we did it, and we just I think it was just, we just had the studio for a day and went in there and blasted it out. And it's, you know, Malfunction, it just, there's such a special place in my heart for Malfunction and how much Andy Wood influenced me and how much he affected a lot of people that were in Seattle music at the time that I would see at clubs and stuff because of his musical diversity and his sense of humor and his love of both, like, I mean, he was underground, but only because that's who was coming to see him play. You know, like he loved a lot of different stuff. So that would have made him a freak and people, you know, wouldn't have bought him as a, you know, well, I mean, who knows? I don't know. But I just think that his influence, his ability to kind of spread his sort of vision about music and humor and love was, you know, tangible and you know, visceral. So he really had a huge impact on me, and I have always been chasing that, you know, that same feeling that he would give me in just encountering him on the streets or playing music with him or listening to his, you know, ambient music that he would make, sort of these bizarre Brian Eno, you know, falsetto mixtapes where he would use his blaster and he would like record on one side of a cassette and then he figured a way he could keep recording on another side of the tape so he could do tracks and then do it over and over again, and they would just be this noisy, bizarro musical landscapes. He's always been so impactful, and that song, you know, that came out on the Deep Six record, which was kind of when all of us were kind of like, oh, this, you know, had a bunch of stuff going on in Seattle. It's the first time we were on vinyl and or on a record, and it was just a song that was really close to my heart and Regan's, and it's punk rock, you know. I mean, it's like they loved Kiss and Prince and they played punk rock, so at that time that was a revelation. It's not a revelation anymore. It's like, you know, everything's mashed together now, and it's, you know, but at the time it wasn't, you know.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Stone Gossard. And then, you know, and flashing forward now to hear this recording with you all doing it, hearing, you know, Sean all over this record. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe that's because that was the lens I was sort of hearing it. Because there is that looking back a little bit with the Malfunction track and then knowing, you know, Sean wasn't around much longer after this. Did you get a sense of where he was? I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's a track like Take Me Back Home. Like there is a bit of taking stock happening.
Yeah, I think he was in a frame of mind in that way. You know, all of us are very aware of our mortality at this point. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not running into somebody who's my age or older, where we're looking at each other going, you know, it's like, you know, how many times did you get up and go to the bathroom last night? You know, like, you know, have you had your, you know, colonoscopy yet? Like, you know, it's coming. And that's a real place to be, is like, you know, to be thinking about that your time on this planet is limited, you know? So, he was in that frame of reference. But honestly, the spirit, the week before he died, it was nothing but text messages talking about, oh my God, we have all these songs and we're going to do, here's, oh, I got three more and you're going to do this and we're going to fix this way. And, you know, there was so much enthusiasm and so much, like, again, the spirit of thinking about our first record, talking about it and just saying, you know, how do we do that? How do we find our way to that place where we're not, you know, we're trusting each other, you know, and really, like, and just kind of going in with an open mind. And unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to do that again, but we did get a chance to do that quite a bit. So.
Well, I love, especially with the reissue of Shame Happening too, how those two records kind of get to exist, you know, as sort of this, not as one thing, but, you know, in a similar thing. And it does bring up the question for me, you're such a big fan, do you think you're going to do the same thing for Interiors with a reissue?
No, I think we'll do vinyl for the Brad stuff for sure. And that's just something we're kind of getting going now, you know, with both Loose Groove and some of these things that'll be either on Loose Groove or closely related to them. We'll be doing more vinyl. So for sure, vinyl Interiors, for sure, some Sean solo stuff. There'll be lots of stuff, limited kind of stuff that for people that are really hardcore. So
I love that, because not having Interiors on vinyl has always been a sore spot for me. That's one of my favorites right there. Loose Groove, you mentioned it, by the way. So I've been playing the hell out of the Brittany Davis new track, So Fly.
That's great.
It's so good.
It's insane. On another plane right now. So that's all Brittany, the whole production, all those horn lines at the end, that's Brittany just, I mean, arranging that stuff in like seconds. Like it's crazy, you know.
So good. So good. But I noticed a few years ago, around the time you were relaunching Loose Groove, that became the thing for everybody, all the members of Pearl Jam, is what I'm getting to. It used to be, it felt like everything was Monkey Wrench, and then suddenly everybody's got their own little imprints.
Yeah.
Is there a story there?
Probably. I mean, but here's the thing. It's like, all of us like to do stuff, you know, and it ends up kind of wanting to be differentiated, because you can kind of run it through, but do you want to, we already negotiate with each other about so much, you know, in terms of music and stuff like that. Sometimes it's better to kind of let something exist more outside of that, the Pearl Jam world, you know, and if it's real, Pearl Jam world can acknowledge it and sort of, you know, but you know, it needs to be real. And I think part of it is for these artists that I'm working with is wanting it to be real and really wanting it to, you know, I want some of these artists to succeed. I want all of them to. And I believe that we kind of have a great little thing going right now with, you know, with Regan and I's relationship and our kind of history together and our love of, you know, of a lot of different kinds of music. Regan has always been such an enormous influence on me in terms of art and in terms of exposing me to music that I would have never listened to in a million years. And Billie Jean Cerullo, who's over at The Orchard, who's our third partner and is a wizard and understands how record companies work and how it works at radio and a lot of these sort of archaic, the knowledge is very specialized. It's been a blast. It's like a little band on its own. So there's no real story. I think Monkey Wrench kind of never really kind of got off the bat. There was a couple, maybe there's a Pearl Jam record that came out on Monkey Wrench, but it was really universal the whole time, you know? So it was, that was more of a,
That was more of an imprint thing that wasn't really. No, nobody felt like they owned it, you know.
I was gonna say, it's. I mean, I do love the freedom it's given you with Loose Groove. I know we've talked about it before. The Chicago Cab soundtrack was a really influential disc to me in the 90s, you know, and as sort of a showcase for what you were doing, you know, putting out in your taste at the time. What is the Loose Groove story right now? You know, I am jumping ahead in timelines, I think, here, but, you know, we're talking Brittany Davis already and of course, Painted Shield, you know, has been around and all this. Like, what else is coming?
Painted Shield 3 will be done, I hope, in the next couple of months. So that's coming. Again, Matt Chamberlain having an enormous impact. Brittany Davis will be, those two will be featured on that and will be amazing. Britt just co-produced and did some production on an artist named Zozier that we're working with right now. The new Tiger Cub, it gets released in week and a half or something like that. They've got a new single coming out, Show Me Your Maker, which is freaking incredible, heavy rock song. James and the Cold Gun, another English rock band. There's bands we want to sign right now. We're in love with this band called Bad Nerves from the UK. And we keep telling them that we really want to put the record out. We haven't got them yet, but they're a really, really good band. The Brittany Davis record is the one that's coming next, though, that we're really excited about. And there'll be re-releases, like you said, more Brad records on vinyl. I got a couple of solo records that'll come out on vinyl at some point too. So,
oh, wait, are you putting out Bayleaf on vinyl?
I think so. I think that'll be the plan.
Bayleaf was the long, like, sorry to interrupt you there. Let me compliment you, because Bayleaf should have been heard way more than it was at the time. And I remember so I was early in radio when it came out, and I remember, I don't remember who was working at Epic Records at the time, but it came in the mail and I had to call them and I was like, oh my God, you know, Stones put out a solo record. And they're like, yeah, you know, we're just kind of servicing it. And I'm like, why is there were songs on there, you know, Cadillac and
they're trying to keep me down.
It's a great record. It really is a great record.
It's fun that it exists. And I think it's going to be more enjoyable for me to put it out on vinyl now and kind of be able to kind of, you know, it's been literally 20 years. Which is insane, because that felt like in the middle of it all, you know, still. So that just shows you how long it's been around. But yeah, so we'll be doing a lot of that stuff. I'm trying to think if there's one other thing too. Keith Lowe, the bass player for Brad, has an ambient record that's coming out. It's going to be freaking great, beautiful record. So we're just more and more stuff, and we're just having a blast doing it. And it's so much fun to get, Johnny Polonsky record will be out next week, I think. Love working with Johnny. It's just, I get to get demos and people record stuff and they send them to me, and I get to just be enthusiastic and just be like, sounds great, you know, keep going, that's a great path, or, you know, we've got a couple like this now, what is something you wouldn't normally do, where do you want to go, you know, like, it doesn't matter about this or that. It's just being able to kind of be that voice that is encouraging and facilitating in terms of helping an artist get a record done and not overthink it and to believe in it. And then, you know, hopefully create a home where they can make more records. And it doesn't mean they're going to be huge, but in the long run, if we're all kind of collaborating and kind of working together, that network can be really supportive and a really like helpful way for an artist to kind of have all the work they need to do, so that when that moment does arrive where there is an opportunity for them to kind of go to the next level because a song gets in a soundtrack, or, you know, or something happens where a song is just getting attention, or they're performing in a way, or they're working with another artist and they're collaborating in a new way. All that material is still available for folks, and they'll have a, you know, so I, you know, I like community. I like, and this record label is nice as a way of being in community.
Well, I love the stuff you put out. I love working with Billie Jean. I know we sang her praises a minute ago. She's fantastic. I've known her for, quite a long time too.
Yeah.
And having a team like that is important. And of course I'll use that as a seg because I'm sure they take a little bit of the weight when the Pearl Jam beast starts cranking back up. And are you all still recording? Is that still happening?
We're getting close. We're getting close to the finish line.
Close to the finish line. I'm glad you didn't say we're getting close to starting, because that's what I thought you were saying for a second.
No. We've been recording for, you know, a year or so, and it hasn't been constant. We did some recording and then we took a break and then we've done some more, and so we're getting closer and closer. So it's gonna be a good one.
So are you guys working with someone this time? Like I feel like I remember hearing news that you all were working with the person who produced Ed's solo record,
Andrew Watt. Who's a big time pop producer, fucking hilarious. And not only a big time pop producer, but the most hardcore Pearl Jam fan that you'll ever meet, and can play all of our songs and all of Soundgarden songs back at us, and on a better than we can play them. And so he's a real fan, but he's, you know, East Coast Jewish kid that grew up, you know, immersed in Pearl Jam, you know, in particular that world, the East Coast, kind of the, you know, even the sort of Jewish East Coast thing. There's this like hardcore Pearl Jam fan. It's like, and he was one of them. And it's been such a joy to make a record with him. He's so enthusiastic. He's young and, you know, bouncing off the walls and just loving the opportunity to work with us, and we're totally being blessed by him because he's energizing us. I think that's what you'll hear in the record, is that there's just good energy.
What is that? I mean, having someone who knows you all inside, having someone who's that kind of fan, does that mean that he has sort of an idea of the Pearl Jam he wants to hear?
Yeah.
Like, and I guess what I'm saying is, does that direct you guys past to an earlier sound or something, I guess is what I was getting at.
You'll have to be the judge of that. You know, I think it's an energy that he's looking for, you know, that feeling, you know, he's a fan club member. He's fucking seen the band 50 times, you know, just like, but he's also literally a top flight pop producer. You know, he's like making Justin Bieber records and, you know, he's making, you know, Selena Gomez and, you know, what, all of that stuff. But that's not where his, you know, he likes pop. I'm more of a pop fan than he is. So, but it's fun, and we're getting closer. So at some point we'll have a record out.
At some point, it's exciting because, I mean, obviously I love everything you did. You know, all the records, even in the past decade. I say all the records in the past decade. I'm not gonna let you off. There's been two records in the past decade, but but you know, hearing that we're gonna get back at it. In you're right, you're probably too close to talk about even what this, I know how that is, you know, to even know what it sounds like. I personally, like, it's 25th anniversary of Yield this year. Yield is actually probably, that's the one I go to most. I've let go of the word favorites. I go, yeah, to Yield more than anything else when I go, you know, for an older album. But to kind of hear that album, what I loved about it was there was sort of course, that was the great rock comeback. As it's been told in the press. But there was this sort of pop rock element. At the same time, there was still the weird Pearl Jam. And I really love when those two kind of connect, if you know what I mean.
Jack Irons, you know, that's it's the kind of the apex of our sort of Jack Irons era. And Jack is a gentleman and an amazing musician, and was so great to play music with. You know, Brendan O'Brien, again, you know, playing a really key role in that. I think it was close around the time that we also made Mirrorball. So there was some of that kind of energy going around, if I'm not mistaken. And, yeah, we were all of us were writing at that point. All of us were really kind of believing in the power of being in a band, and I still had something to prove. And it's a record that we play a lot live. People respond to those songs. And again, you don't know why something ends up being magical to your fans. You just are just thankful that it does, you know? So there's a lot of records where we were making them that I was thinking, this is not, it's not good enough, or we should have redone this or done that or whatever. And, you know, 20 years later, it's, sounds great, you know. It's like I wouldn't want to change any of it, you know. So, but you So we've done that a lot. That's we're strong at that aspect of it. I think this new record will end up being a great combination of things that sound not worked over, high energy, but executed well.
Would love to hear it. And I won't ask you this again because I've asked you before, maybe multiple times, but you all did give us the box sets of those first three records, and I thought they were going to continue, and I thought there was going to be the Jack Irons era with No Code and Yield, and that's never came. I'm not asking you, but I'm still saying it's not here yet.
I don't know anything about it, but I'm sure it's coming.
Do you remember what's in the vault for that? Like, I know we heard some B-sides and everything. Do you think there's a lot in the vault for that era?
I do not know. I don't know. There may be some tracks that we haven't heard. We're getting a pretty good buildup of Lost Dogs at this point. So that might be more likely. Next is more of a all eras sort of songs that didn't quite make the cut that you guys can now listen to and go, how could you have not put that song out? It's my favorite. And we'll go, okay, put it out and we'll play it.
Lost Dogs Volume 2. You've got those. You've got those songs, I'm sure, with the bands that you like too. You know, sure. you get into like the B sides and or the, you know, the anniversary issues. You're like, what the hell, man? That was so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love what you all do. I love what you do. In the Moment That You're Born, this Brad record. I know it's a conclusion, and it's such a great conclusion. Yeah, man. And I can't wait to hear what happens with Pearl Jam next. I know you guys are also going to tour with Inhaler later this year. That Inhaler record, Cuts and Bruises, one of my favorite albums of the year.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
There's such a great one.
Well, yeah, that's right. Those are dates coming up in September. That's who we're playing with. Let's start listening to Inhaler right now.
It's Bono's kid. That's who it is. It's Bono. Yeah. Stone, thank you so much, as always. I'm so glad we got to do this again.
Yeah, really nice to see you, Kyle, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
And my thanks to Stone Gossard again. Brad, final album In the Moment That You're Born and 30th anniversary of Shame. You can look for those now. And be looking forward to that new Pearl Jam album whenever that arrives as well. It's feeling like probably, what is that, a next year type of thing if I had to guess. Thanks to Stone. Thanks to you for checking out the series. I do hope you hit that subscribe button again. You're going to get 3 new interviews every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. To keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover the new ones, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And then after that, head over to WFPK.org. So I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. That's Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. One of my recent shows, you would hear music from The English Beat and Simple Minds, Concrete Blonde, Elliott Smith, The Who, The Police, The Smiths, Meat Puppets, Fishbone, Tori Amos, Beck, Fleet Foxes, Leonard Cohen, A Tribe Called Quest, Blur, Eurythmics, and I talked with Bowen Yang of Saturday Night Live fame. We got to talk about the new season of Awkwafina Is Nora from Queens. That's just a recent episode of my show that starts 6 p.m. each weekday at WFPK.org. Consequence, they've got your music and film news. Of course, you can also find me on the social media spots, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all 3 of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I didn't calculate this one right. Is it possible that we could do this in like 4 hours?
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.